And here to talk about what the Ravens did in that regard from the USA Today, the Ravens Wire. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, what's happening?
Yeah, we got to get like birth stones going. Right. You know, every little detail. But, you know, you're right. 11 picks the Ravens entered the draft with, and they did a little maneuvering. But you know what? They ended up with 11 draft picks. So a lot of new guys to get to know.
And before we get to the draft picks, well, as many as we can in our allotted time, the fact that Mark Andrews was not traded for picks or players, whatever, did that surprise you to any level, given the fact that there were some whispers that that could be a reality here?
It didn't surprise me. I mean, there was always a possibility, and, you know, it wouldn't have shocked me if he was. But in reality, Baltimore clearly just didn't get what they wanted for him, and that appeared to be some level of a day two pick or something along those lines. And I don't blame them for not moving him for anything less than that, because for Andrews, in my opinion, look, he had a bad Buffalo game. We know that the playoffs haven't been up to the regular season standard, but in my opinion, still a top five tight end in the league. They have Isaiah Likely, and they would have been fine if they traded him away, but I think he still provides a lot of value to you. And if he leaves in free agency next year because his contract is up, you're going to get a comp pick anyway, probably in the fourth round or something along those lines. So I think that if you weren't getting a third or a second for him or value, it's more valuable to have him on your roster this season, have him contribute and give you that hopefully top five tight end production, and then let him walk, let Isaiah Likely take over and get the comp pick. So it didn't shock me. It kind of felt like that was where it was going. Eric DaCosta at the pre-draft press conference made it a little uncertain, but at the end of the day, Mark Andrews is still a Raven, and I expect it to be that way until the end of the year this year.
I totally agree with you there, Kevin, because I think the Ravens are all in, and I think they have a roster and the right to be all in. Because if they don't win it this year, I think then it's going to be tough, because they're going to have a lot of, you know, the Humphreys may be gone, and you know, Andrews will be gone. They'll be missing some guys.
I 100% agree, and it feels like, you know, it's not the last year for these guys in terms of like, oh, big changes like Lamar, like that's not happening. But it's big changes like Andrews, Humphrey, like you talked about, and maybe even Harbaugh if things don't go well. So I think that this is like this is their last chance to go, and I think with this group, make something happen, especially because you're going to start getting into extensions like Likely and Travis Jones and Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum, and that's going to cost a lot of money. And then once other guys' contracts begin to expire, you're going to have some tough decisions to make. They didn't lose a ton this offseason. They were able to add and not really subtract and improve on their roster that made the division round this past year. So, you know, this is the last hurrah before some people start getting very, very expensive.
Now, Kevin, how many of the 11 make the 50? I think better, don't make the 53. We'll start out there.
Don't make it, I think, at least two. And the reason I say that is because, I mean, first of all, I just don't think there's enough space. Second of all, I think that there are roster crunches at a lot of positions that Baltimore took. And that's, look, it's a good problem to have. But I think that, for example, with the kicker situation, I know a lot of people are wondering what that means for Justin Tucker. Obviously, I think there's going to be a competition. I don't know what the Ravens are going to do with, you know, Justin Tucker, whether the NFL's investigation concludes, what they want to proceed with after that happens. But I only see one kicker making the roster, and whether that is Tucker or not, we will see. But the fact is that the Ravens are not afraid to cut draft picks. They're not afraid. We've seen that with fifth rounders Merritt DeCosta. It's a big change from what Ozzie used to do when he was the big man in charge there. So I think that's one competition to watch. I think in the offensive line position, I think it's going to be probably Grant Dellinger or Nick Semek, who was their seventh rounder last season. You know, I don't think both those, they triple dipped at offensive line. So, you know, with them bringing back Cleveland, and yes, they lost a couple offensive linemen too, but I think that 11 is too many to make the roster. I would probably say 9 to 10 max. Probably. And I think at least one does not make the roster.
So what do you think Mike Green's role is going to be?
I think instant impact playmaker. I think it has to be. And there's not a player in this class that would have, especially where he was picked, that gave me such a boost in how I view a certain positional group for really any team, but obviously for the Ravens here. With Mike Green, I mean, as a breakdown, he's an impact player. He can play the run very well. Obviously, he is a pass rusher. If he adds a little more strength this offseason, I know it's different adding strength in a full NFL offseason versus coming into the draft in year one. We saw that with Nate Wiggins last year. But the speed to power is real, and if he adds a little more strength, he's going to be devastating. He has a bunch of great pass rushing moves, the spin move being probably the one that's his go-to. And, you know, at Marshall last year, 17 sacks is nothing to scoff at. And he played a couple big-time schools last year. That Ohio State game, he wrecked that game. So I think, to me, having Van Noy, Oweh, and Mike Green in there, we talked about how the Steelers have T.J. Watt and the Browns have Myles Garrett and the Bengals have Trey Hendrickson. The Ravens didn't really have their guy, like their star there. I think we could be talking about Mike Green and that breadth on the field in the next couple of years. Maybe even he makes that type of impact his rookie season, that Roger Rosengarten, Nate Wiggins impact, which is exactly what they need if they want to compete out of their rookies here.
You think Malachi Starks realizes that he's going to end up making Kyle Hamilton more money?
I think he might. And you know what? Kyle Hamilton might have to give him a little gift when he gets that contract, because the fact that Hamilton now can be freed up, he's going to be able to move around that defense again. Obviously, Starks is very versatile himself, but, you know, I think we were all kind of wondering what the Ravens' plan was. There were reports coming out right before the draft. They wanted to keep him deep, which, look, he can play, but we know that the Ravens' defense, despite them being really good last year when he was at deep part of the field, they're at their best when he can move around and play all over the field. So Starks is going to be really important for them. And you're exactly right. Not just because he's a good player, but because it frees up Kyle Hamilton to go out there and do those Kyle Hamilton things.
Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, the Ravens Wire. Kevin, last thing for you. It's Justin Tucker kicked his last football for the Ravens.
Oh, if I had to predict right now, because
and
they
you do, that's why I asked you.
I would say my prediction is yes for now, because it's the first time in team history that they have invested draft capital in a kicker. It feels a little different this offseason as compared to others, especially even just with the on-field performance, let alone all the off-field stuff. So right now I would say yes, but as we know, there's still a long way to go, I think, with how that plays out.
Kevin Allstriker, USA Today. It's the Ravens Wire. Kevin, we appreciate your time. We do every Tuesday here on the Fan. We'll talk to you next week. A little tournament Tuesday style. You got it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Always appreciate you.
All right, Kevin Allstriker. We'll come back, whip around. What's going on in world of sports? Last night, NHL and NBA, pretty hot and heavy. Joe Lunardi's bracketology's out, and you might be surprised that Maryland's actually in this sort of thing, kind of. Stay tuned for that. And then Scott Petra. A+, Mel Kiper says, for the Browns draft. He's with BrownZone.com. Does he agree?
Vinny and Haney's Whip Around.
Every sport.
Every game.
Everything.
Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. Best crab cakes in Harford County.
Time for the Whip Around. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Turn it up Tuesday. Playing loud music for you. Pick a song. We'll get it cranked to 12. Send your request. Plot Sport text line at 410-583-1057. We're not even a month removed from the end of the men's college basketball season. National champion, Florida, in an epic title game against Houston. Maryland made the Sweet 16 for the first time in 9 years. That's been a month ago. Buzz Williams in, Kevin Willard out. But Joe Lunardi, always working at ESPN.com, has his new bracketology based on the first round of portal stuff. And Maryland literally has an entirely different roster than the one Nolan that made it to the Sweet 16. The Crab 5, they've been picked. Julian Reese, if he gets another year, and Keith Kavanaugh has said for 2 months he will. He's entered the transfer portal. Probably, if he applies his trade at the collegiate level, will not be in College Park. But Joe Lunardi's liked enough to the point where he's got Maryland as a 10 seed. Hey, we thought they were going to win 10 games. Now, they still could. But Maryland, early bracketology, 10 seed, according to Joe Lunardi. East region, which would be down in Washington, D.C. I see what you're doing there. Number one seed there would be Duke, by the way. But Maryland's first round matchup, how about a little North Carolina Tar Heel fun? Some old school ACC rivalry revisited.
Lunardi's been trying to make that happen. I feel like all his bracketologies, when he can,
yeah,
he puts Duke and Maryland in the same region. never actually happens, though. Yeah, so it's not really an accurate prediction.
Haven't played Carolina coming up on 10 years. Duke was what? Back when they were still in the ACC?
2013.
If I'm not mistaken. But a possible second-round matchup, if they get by the Tar Heels, would be UConn. And you don't think old Danny Hurley be pissed off going into March Madness there, which, of course, we'd be watching religiously. And you could listen to here on 105.7 The Fan. But the whip around last night, Stanley Cup playoffs, it was Florida 4-2 over Tampa. The Florida ball club, the Panthers, now commanding 3-1.
Yeah, it was an interesting game to watch because Tampa scored 2 goals like bam, bam. You know, Florida scored first, and it was Tampa. Bam, bam.
It was like 11 seconds between goals.
Yeah, and then Florida scored 2 goals within 11 seconds, you know, to take the lead. You know, it was crazy because it was like figuring that it was going to be overtime. And then I heard Jeremy talking about it because I think he had the under, and he thought with 3 minutes to go, you know, it's 2-1. He said, I'm good. Yeah, and then within 11 seconds, Florida scored 2 goals, boom, and then they got the empty netter.
3-1.
Yeah, and it's going back to Tampa, which I think it's going to be tough for Tampa to come back from this, Bob, to be totally honest. I think Florida, they got healthy. You know, I mean, they didn't care about how they finished. They just wanted to get healthy, and they are healthy. Kachuk's playing good. Marchand had a big assist last night. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to be dangerous again. They could go back-to-back.
Dallas 6-2 over Colorado. The Dallas Stars now up 3-2 in this competitive first round best of 7.
Well, I mean, how about the start Dallas had? Wyatt Johnson scores 9 seconds in. You know, stood up 1-0 after 9 seconds. And Colorado didn't get good goaltending play. Blackwood, he got benched after 2 periods. He gave up 5 goals on 18 shots last night. And likely, Bob, the Avs tie it up at Game 6 back in Colorado. And then we'll go to a Game 7. How about DeBoer, the coach from the Stars, Bob, in Game 7s? 7-0.
Tonight, 4 games. On the ice, Stanley Cup first round. Ottawa's at Toronto. Maple Leafs up 3-1. New Jersey's at Carolina. Carolina looking to close out the Devils as they're up 3-1. Vegas and Minnesota. It's in Las Vegas tonight. Tied at 2 apiece. Edmonton and the Kings also tied at 2. Game 5 in L.A. Caps tomorrow trying to close out the Canadiens down at D.C.
I think we're going to get 2 closeouts tonight, Bob. I think Toronto's going to finish it out. I think Carolina finishes out. I think Vegas and L.A. Kings, I think we go to Game 7s in both those. Because I think Wild have won there, but I think it'll go to Game 7. Kings never lose at home. And then they'll go back to Edmonton. Edmonton wins, and they'll go back to the Kings. I think we have 2 Game 7s and then 2 elimination games tonight.
All right, NBA. Speaking of closing out, Cleveland did it in style. 55-point demolition of the Miami Heat. Most lopsided series in NBA playoff history as they won every game. Well, the closest margin was 9 points. Cleveland, 138-83. Miami goes quietly into the home court, too. They got blown out in both games in Miami. Donovan Mitchell, 22. Haywood Highsmith in his last game of the season for the Miami Heat. Baltimore's own had 2 points, 4 rebounds. So Cleveland, number one seed, they sweep just like Oklahoma City did in the West. So they both handle their business appropriately in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And last night, it was Golden State taking on the Rockets. The Rockets, who were the home court team in the series. Remember, they were the higher seed. Right now, they're on the brink of elimination. Because if they blink, they miss this.
Game, Şengün with 31. And now Şengün. Defended by Green. For the lead. No. Ripping it off. Rebound inside. Whistle blown. Foul. Rockets.
Kevin Harlan, TNT on the call. Şengün missed the chance to put them ahead. Jimmy Buckets got fouled in the previous possession. Hit all 3 free throws. It was kind of a bogus call because he had followed through and his hand on the follow up cherry pick hit the other guy's hand, so I thought that was lame. But then again, they don't ask me for my advice. The officials do. Jimmy Butler at 27, dealing with the sprained gluteus maximus or hip whatever it is. Then after the games, I got my mojo back, blah, blah, blah. On a day where Miami lost by 55 to get eliminated, he's bragging about how happy he is in Golden State. But playoff Jimmy came to the equation. Warriors now up 3-1 in that Western Conference Series tonight. Milwaukee's at Indiana. Dame Lillard, torn Achilles. He's done probably through next season. Pacers look to close them out. They're up 3-1. Same at Madison Square Garden tonight. Much more competitive series. Detroit at the Knicks. Orlando's at Boston. Celtics lead that series 3-1. So these home court advantages could be advantageous. And then the Clippers in Denver, which has been the great series so far in the first round. Gordon's dunk at the buzzer to win game 4. 2-2, that series is tied. Kawhi Leonard, Joker, James Harden, a lot of Jamal Murray, a lot of star power in this one. That's coming up tonight late out in Denver. It's the Whip Around video at 81057 The Fan. And one thing for you, Orioles history, how about this one? It's April 29th, 1983 in Seattle. Sweet, sweetie Kenny Singleton, 2-for-5 for Ribby. Scott McGregor, complete game 9 hitter, as he improved to 3-0 as the eventual world champion Orioles beat the Mariners at the Old Kingdom 9-1. When we come back, Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com, talk about the Cleveland draft. Mel Kiper Jr. gave it an A+. Boy, did you get an idea of who he really liked in the draft over the weekend? We'll talk to Scott about that if he agrees. And then a funhouse trip, Nolan McGraw, 11:45. Cleveland Browns got an A+ from Mel Kiper Jr. Here to talk about that from BrownZone.com. He is on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the show Scott Petrak. Scott, good morning. Thanks for joining us. A+, huh? Old Mel coming strong with that grade. I don't know if you noticed, he was a pretty big fan of Shedeur Sanders over the weekend.
Yeah, I think those things might be connected there.
But the trade out of 2, Mason Graham coming in, a great pick at 5, at least that's what we assume. Was there a stun level for you as that was all happening in real time?
It was a minor surprise, and I kind of blame myself. You know, early in the draft process, you talk about all the scenarios, and one of them that I kept writing was, could trade down and perhaps take a guy like Mason Graham, because that's how the Browns operate. They like to trade back. They like to acquire extra picks. And if you weren't going to take a quarterback at 2, then you're more willing to trade down. And I think that's the Browns' preference in most situations. So, but as it got closer, the focus was more intense on Travis Hunter. It felt like they were going to take him. I kind of lost sight of that being a legitimate option. And then as the day went along, as the hours came close to the draft, like, oh my gosh, they're going to do this. So, you know, like I said, mild surprise, but it makes sense when you think about how the Browns like to operate. And that first round pick in 2026 is huge. They might need to go get a quarterback. They wouldn't have made a deal without getting that first round pick in 2026. In addition, they got number 36, which they took on Ohio State running back Quinshon Judkins.
Hey, Scott, what was the fans' reaction been since the trade?
Didn't go over well. I think there's some small segment of the fans that appreciates it. And maybe as we get away from the actual trade, there's more people to say, okay, I understand it. In the heat of the moment, I know my mentions and, you know, my buddies texting me, nobody liked it.
Now, what about the quarterback situation? They passed on Shedeur a few times, took Gabriel instead of him. What did they see in Gabriel, you know, to take him in the third, end of the third?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of the things they saw in Gabriel are some of the things they saw in Sanders as well. It's accuracy, it's decision-making, it's productive in college, and nobody was more productive than Dylan Gabriel. It was 6 years, but he threw for 18,000 yards, 155 touchdowns. He's in the top 2 and like all these stats in the history of, you know, FBS. So they like that about him. They think he moves well inside the pocket and can create lanes. I mean, he's only 5'11". So that's what they liked about him. I thought that pick was a real stretch. If you take Sanders in the third round and Gabriel in the fifth round, that would have made more sense to me. And you still end up with those two guys. But obviously they had Gabriel rated ahead of Shedeur Sanders, which adds a layer to this quarterback competition and this quarterback room as things start to develop. Because, you know, I don't think a whole lot of people had Gabriel rated ahead of Sanders, but they did. So how does that affect this competition moving forward?
I think it's a four-man – well, I don't count Watson in the room. It's a four-man room, and I think one of the rookies probably wins the job. I think Shedeur Sanders, he can put up or shut up, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I have Kenny Pickett is my favorite right now because the Browns have talked him up in the offseason, and they think he has a chance to – kind of be unlocked here. You know, I don't know if this is a perfect example or not, but what Kevin O'Connell did with Sam Darnold last year in Minnesota, I think the Browns hope Kevin Stefanski and Tommy Rees can do that with Kenny Pickett, former first-round pick, has shown some stuff in the league and still young enough that, man, if they can discover something here and he reaches his full potential, maybe they have their future starting quarterback. So I would give him the early nod, and then I think Sanders would be my second betting favorite to win the starting job because I always liked Sanders when he was coming out, and that hasn't changed now just because of the slide. And with Joe Flacco, if everybody else fails, you know you can just put Joe Flacco in, and he's going to be Joe Flacco. He's going to be fine. They know that they can run the offense. So I think he's a perfect insurance policy behind those other two guys. And then Gabriel, maybe I'm not giving him his due. I just don't like short quarterbacks, and I think he's got too much to overcome to turn out to be the guy.
Now, is Stefanski going to call plays? Because for the quarterbacks that they're drafting, it fits into Stefanski's hands.
Yes, he is going to call plays, and you're right. It's the system. They've drafted two running backs, so I fully expect them to recommit to the run game like they had earlier in Stefanski's tenure. They drafted a tight end in the third round, highly productive Harold Fannin Jr. out of Bowling Green. You pair him with David Njoku. So I expect it to be a little bit of a retro offense with no doubt Stefanski calling the plays.
Now, Scott, when does, and you guys will love it, when does the circus start when the rookies come in? Because all the media are going to go talk to one guy. And the other thing is Deion coming in to rookie minicamp too? Yeah.
I don't know the Deion answer yet. I know Shedeur Sanders is in town, put that on his Instagram page, but the rookie minicamp is not this coming weekend, the next weekend. So whatever, May 8th and 9th. So that's when it really gets going.
Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com, joining us here, video at 81057 The Fan, talking about the draft that was. Cleveland addressing needs like every team assumed that they did, Scott, as you know, as you assess the other teams in the North, at least based on expectations and need filling, blah, blah, blah. Who do you think did a pretty good job over the last weekend, 3 days there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Baltimore always does. It always feels like somebody falls into the lap, you know? And I felt like that with Starks. Like, they just sit there and wait and then pick whoever, this player that just happens to be around, no good reason he's still around. So I like that pick. It felt like a lot of picks across the division were spent on defense, which maybe is, you know, maybe that fits. It's appropriate for this division. I'm intrigued by the Pittsburgh quarterback situation. I liked Will Howard. You know, I have questions about his arm strength, but I think there's a chance that he can be good at this level. And, you know, who knows what's going to go on with Aaron Rodgers. So I think there's a lot to digest across this division. But I thought a lot of teams, I mean, you saw it the first day, each team focused on defense to start the draft.
Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com. Scott, as always, appreciate the time. Enjoy rookie camp in a couple of weeks there. And, you know, grab the popcorn. I'm sure it'll be fun.
Oh, it'll be crazy.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Scott Petrak, everybody. Who thinks Kenny Pickett is the favorite to be the starting quarterback there? And if he was any good, I guess the Steelers wouldn't have their own quarterback problems. going to kind of all circle back, if you know what I'm saying. We'll come back, bring in Mr. Electricity, Nolan McGraw, trip through the funhouse. Coming up at noon, going to hear from Eric DaCosta and some of the Ravens draft picks of 2025. Buy or sell, where's the Turn It Up Tuesday money? Hopefully we're counting that. Danielle Allentuck, Baltimore Banner, talk about the Orioles. They'd start that series with the Yankees with a W and a close win at that. A lot of injuries, and they're piling up. And that runner in scoring position problem is still very much a problem. They're not back. I'm not even going to try to patronize the audience. Get to 500. And the injuries are mounting again. Struggle city for a lot of players still. 1-for-7 runners in scoring position. So that's been a season-long dilemma. Actually going back second half of last year. 2 years ago, the Orioles were the best team in baseball in that category. But now, can't get it done. Second and third, nobody out. No sack fly, no ground ball to short. They're conceding the run. And two Ks after the Adley fly ball to left field. So until that improves, you can get all the great pitching you want unless you're going to hit a ton of home runs every game, which they haven't done. It's going to be a hard thing for them to do, achieve victory on a consistent basis when there's too many other inconsistencies with the team. Hey, but beating the Yankees is good. You know, maybe feeling good about yourself. You notice Gunnar did the sprinkler thing because Gibson's back. Kyle Gibson, who started it 2 years ago. So I guess the fishing, they didn't get a lot of doubles to begin with. But maybe the sprinkler's back, and maybe they'll start sucking out of that homer hose.
I think it might have been a reflex. He didn't even think about it. He just said, oh, this is what it feels like to hit a double. Right. This is what I do. And they just said his muscle memory took over.
Yeah, and they're saving a lot of water out in Mr. Splash Zone, too. I mean, they're not really splashing a lot of people, but handle your business, get a quality start, you know, and play a clean game best they could. You know, as we talked about earlier, Arias' error did lead to an unearned run. We'll see what Kyle Gibson does tonight. I'm more concerned or interested, shall we say, to say what the offense does against Carlos Rodon, 3-3, lefty, .350 batting average. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was great. Enjoy the win. It's 24 hours. 24 hours to enjoy a quality win. You beat the Yankees. There's nothing ever wrong to say about that.
No.
And, you know, speaking of the celebrations and everything, we didn't get to Ryan O'Hearn's hot mic incident yet. Now, after his home run, this wasn't on the Masson feed, so I didn't see this until I went on social media a little bit later in the night. But the Yankees broadcast, the Yes feed, showed Ryan O'Hearn and the other guys drinking from the hydration station after the home run. And, well, Ryan O'Hearn had some choice words to say.
And the hydration station.
Suck my f***ing balls.
I guess the mouth should get cleaned out.
So there's Michael Kay with a nice quip. But, you know, not the best thing to maybe get picked up there. Adley Rutschman's face afterwards is hilarious, by the way, if you haven't seen the clip. Now, Ryan O'Hearn, to his credit, and I have nothing wrong with what he said. We're adults here.
You should hear what we say when the mics are turned off around this place.
Yes. Well, we talk about passion. They're not having fun. They're not into it. Sometimes, all right, you're going through a hard stretch. It just, you need that one FU moment. Like, all right, we're still good. We've still got it. Anyone saying that we stink, we're this, we're that, you know what? You know what, my, you know what? I mean, that's okay. It's what it is. I mean, so O'Hearn, to his credit, he did apologize. If you missed that, here it is.
I'm going to start by apologizing to the kids, you know, watching. There's a hot mic in the dugout there. And, you know, obviously we're fired up and say some things that we shouldn't maybe, you know, we don't want kids to hear. So I just want to say sorry for that.
All right, well, that's a, you know, a noble gesture on his part.
Right. But, I mean, look, I think people were kind of making some assumptions over the past week on social media. This team, they're not united anymore. They don't care. There's something wrong in the clubhouse. And maybe there is. I don't know. I'm not in there. But a moment like that to me last night, that felt like, okay, they're not back in the sense that the team's solved all their issues.
Nope.
But maybe from a personality standpoint, looking for a little more fire, a little more passion, maybe that moment last night could serve as a step in the right direction.
And Gibson is respected in the clubhouse. We'll see how it goes. Of course, he needs to be effective on the mound. Respect is one thing. Performance certainly speaks louder than that. I mean, if you're good at both, then you're the dude, which he was. I mean, he won 15 games for the Orioles 2 years ago when they won the division. But we'll find all that out tonight. Coming up at 6:35, be interesting to see what Brandon Hyde's lineup's going to be, minus Gary Sanchez and Jordan Westberg against a left-handed starting pitcher, and a pretty effective one at that.
All right. Well, let's see what the people are
saying.
Let's
get to Maverick Hanley.
Let's put Mountie at bat in about ninth.
I don't care if he bats 10th like slow-pitch softball. Just start hitting.
Quick Draw's Funhouse. Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com. 105.7 The Fan.
Couple on the Orioles here. First one, not convinced by last night. Still too poor with runners in scoring position, even in a victory. I need this team. Give me, please, just one dominant win, not just one lucky swing, for me to feel good about the way this team is playing.
I don't think that was a lucky swing. He was on that pitch from the minute it left Warren's hand. But I get your point. Again, 1-4-7. They're 27th in baseball with runners in scoring position. And they've been bad for almost a calendar year in that category. Second and third, nobody out. They couldn't get together. No! Get her done.
Here's an interesting one on the pitching issues. Texter says, should the O's consider maybe stretching Keegan Aiken out into a starter again? Out of options on the farm, very short on depth, a lot of injuries. Perhaps he's changed a lot since his days as a starter. Is that worth any thought there?
I would say no, because he's become so good in his role now. I mean, he's that 2-3-inning guy, if need be, to bridge the gap from a shaky start to, you know, possible safe situation, depending on what your run output is. I mean, if you move it from there, where he's an asset, goes to the rotation where he might suck, then you've weakened yourself in a couple spots. So I would say no. I don't know if that's been brought up to any level, but he's really good at what he does. And look, he goes through his peaks and valleys at times too. But for the most part, Keegan Aiken is an asset to your bullpen. So why weaken your so-called strength?
And one more thought here on the Ravens draft from Matt in Aberdeen. Seems to like the draft class overall, but says his only complaint, they didn't do enough to shore up the defensive line. Lost some key pieces there, Michael Pierce retiring.
I think we heard Eric talk after the draft that they were going to be busy, in, especially in that position, you know, with free agents. And, you know, the draft, you know, we had undrafted free agency, then we have the draft, and then there's still ways to accumulate players, and they're not done yet. They're not done. And, you know, we'll see if any of these undrafted guys are worth a hoot and go out there on Sunday. And then they're going to bring in some veteran free agents to play in that D-line, too.
Yeah, this isn't the finished roster.
No.
And they were going to give money to Calais Campbell, but he chose to go back to Arizona. So there was money in the budget for defensive linemen.
Oh, there's going to be. And I would think, you know, most of these guys that are coming in are going to be rotational type players, and they're not going to be high dollar guys.
It's 58 Haiti, 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, news from the NASCAR. Going to hear from Eric DaCosta, John Harbaugh, a couple of Ravens draft picks here. 2025 buyer sellers to turn it up Tuesday money. Hopefully we're counting some. Danielle Allen talk about the Orioles. Game two against the Yankees. The injury woes of the O's, which are real. No doubt about that. And Kyle Gibson return. What does that mean? Hopefully for the rotation and draft profile number two. We're staying offensive line with a guy that, you know, John Cooper liked, but Vinny not so much.